Welcome to the show that gets Christians thinking about faith and politics. Get ready to challenge the status quo, expand your imagination, and tackle controversy head on. Let's stand together at the intersection of faith and freedom. It's time for the Libertarian Christian Podcast.
Greetings, you're listening to the Libertarian Christian Podcast, a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute and a member of the Christians for Liberty Network. We have with us today Wilk Wilkinson, creator and host of the Derate the Hate podcast and director of media systems and operations at Braver Angels. How you doing, Wilk?
I'm very good, Cody. I appreciate the opportunity to join you today.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you being here. So maybe before we talk about Braver Angels, which maybe some folks are familiar with, but maybe not, maybe I'll just ask you a quick question about your podcast, Derate the Hate, and is it connected in any way with the work at Braver Angels?
It is now. So it is produced in collaboration with, because now I am an actual employee of the Braver Angels organization. So I brought that with me when I came on staff at Braver Angels. It still belongs to me, but it's produced in collaboration with Braver Angels now. So
cool. Well, and what is Braver Angels exactly, and how did you get involved with it?
So Braver Angels is America's largest cross-partisan grassroots organization working towards a movement to bridge partisan divides and seek civic renewal. So, and some people might ask, you know, what's a partisan divide or civic renewal? What does that even mean? But the reality, Cody, is we live in some very polarized times. I think last year, Merriam-Webster said polarization was their top word, or depolarization was one of their top words. What it is, you know, partisan politics has gotten to be so toxic. We've seen these fissures, these divides grow, whether it be in our communities, sometimes in our families, certainly in our politics. And you know, it's starting to affect more than just our politics, right? So civic renewal is the idea that we can come together with people that we disagree with and find a way to disagree better. Not always to come to some squishy common ground or you know, milquetoast middle, but come together, have conversations about what we do disagree upon, where we cannot find common ground. We can actually have that conversation in a non-contentious way.
So folks that I know, Braver Angels, have talked about, you know, sort of maybe an aha moment or a story, something that they sort of saw at a Braver Angels event that made them sort of go, okay, this makes sense. This is good. We need to be doing more of this. Was there something like that for you that you saw?
So for me, in my personal story, my experience, Cody, it was more just actually seeing what they were trying to do and knowing that I wanted to be part of that. There wasn't really an aha moment for me because I could see the ugliness. I mean, I had already started the Derate the Hate podcast well before I knew what Braver Angels was or what they were doing. I had already seen all of the ugliness in our media, in our politics, social media. I was experiencing that kind of thing, and I was already in many ways working myself out of that, you know, kind of toxic keyboard warrior mentality. My podcast was focusing a lot on mindset, a little on politics, a little on that toxic media environment, but it was always there. And when this thing, you know, when the ambassadors for Braver Angels came to me and said, hey, we'd like to talk on your podcast about this organization, the day that I heard about it, I signed up for it because I knew how important it was for everybody individually, which is a lot of what I was talking about, is bettering the world one attitude at a time. So everybody as an individual, but more so for the future of our country and the legacy that we're leaving for our children.
Gotcha. Well, so, I mean, I've participated in some Braver Angels events myself. I think when I was first aware of it and connected a little bit with it was when they were called Better Angels. And I think there was some, which comes from the Abraham Lincoln quote, the better angels of our nature.
Yes.
And I think there was some question about the copyright on the term. And so I think Brave Angels is part of the, it was sort of a part of a compromise, but it also sort of fits with the idea of, I think, being willing to sort of have these difficult conversations and to do it in a way where you actually have to be a little bit vulnerable and consider the other side, which can be kind of, you know, painful and difficult when you're so attached to your ideology, right? And so, you know, I'm really sympathetic to what you guys are doing, you know, helping people who disagree to, you know, see the humanity in each other and argue in good faith. And as a libertarian, I consider myself maybe ideologically radical, but temperamentally moderate. You know, I enjoy talking to my Democrat and Republican friends, and I don't think they're inherently bad people. But I do think that what they're both advocating, that violence is acceptable to use against peaceful people through the state, through things like the drug war and taxation and draconian immigration policy, tariffs, the like, those aren't necessary. Those really shouldn't be seen as agree to disagree issues. You know, when we're talking about using violence, whether you use it through the democratic process, whether you just sort of show up with a Molotov cocktail, it's still the same. We're still talking about violence, right? So because of that, I can sort of talk to them about their points of view. I can be friendly. I can respect their sincerity, their good intentions, their humanity. But at some level, I guess I really do think that sometimes what they're advocating is evil. And so how does Braver Angels address the concerns?
You froze up there.
What's that?
Hang on 1 second, Cody. You froze up there on me. So I missed some of what you were saying. So you, the last thing you said that I heard was in some ways, I see what they're doing is advocating for evil. So go ahead and take it from there.
Okay, great. I'll start the number. So my question is, how does Braver Angels address the concerns of someone like me, someone who wants friendly dialogue, who doesn't like the temper and the kind of just the, you know, the mistrust, the dehumanization. But I also don't want to be seen as giving legitimacy to views that I actually do think are violent and immoral. And I don't want to feign a belief in moral neutrality. So you kind of talked earlier about how we're not really trying to find the squishy middle, which is what I would sort of see as that kind of belief in moral neutrality, that we're just going to kind of, you know, that's a long question, but the base of it is when you do sort of worry about compromising on what you think is important, Can we still, does Braver Angels still have tools for us to set that aside, but figure out ways to communicate better anyway and to see the humanity in each other?
Yeah, so absolutely. I mean, first of all, a phenomenal question, a very well thought through question. I think there's a lot to unpack there, Cody. And if you may, or if I may, I want to kind of try to answer it in a couple different ways. So first of all, you know, one of the things that I want to say personally is, having the conversation, engaging in that dialogue, in my personal opinion, does not mean I'm actually legitimizing somebody else's point of view or somehow allowing myself to compromise my own convictions in engaging in that dialogue. I want to say that first of all, because it's important for the concept of bridge building and being able to work through certain things that we understand that the dialogue itself does not mean legitimizing other people's, you know, points of view on certain things. Like I understand you discussed, you know, the drug war or taxation, some of those things as being evil, and you know, whether I agree or disagree with that concept, I can understand how one might get there, you know, but one of the big things, you know, one of the things that is often said at Braver Angels and one of the core tenets of the Braver Way is that we engage in dialogue and find common ground where we can. We want everybody to speak freely, fully, without fear. You know, you talked about the idea of Braver Angels. The importance of that word braver is very important in the sense that speaking freely, fully, without fear, being able to express what your viewpoint on a particular thing is hugely important to that dialogue. But then the other thing is the idea that we come together, we engage in a way that we understand that we all have our blind spots, but not one of us is not worth talking to. So when we think about all of those things, Cody, I mean, I'm just saying that we can look at somebody or come together with somebody and believe that they are completely and totally morally wrong on a particular opinion. But I think it's more important, and the structure of Braver Angels is built in such a way that we are able to come together, have that common ground in the sense that we're going to come together with kind of a pro-humanity stance, understanding that we may see things completely different. We are not trying to find that squishy common ground. So I'm not going to try to compromise with somebody on something that my morality, my moral convictions are completely in contrast to. I don't see that as being the thing. What's more important is using that dialogue, using that structure to have that conversation in a way with them to find out how they came to believe what they believe, how they came to get to where they are in their moral convictions, that they are okay with something like that. So it's not a matter of, you know, trying to find forced compromise. That's just not the way it is. That's not what the structure is built for. You know, if we find common ground, great. If we find out why they came to believe what they believe, that's even better. Because if we are not having the dialogue and everything remains in a way where we are stuck in our own silos, and then we don't even get to know who those people are or why they believe what they believe, that us versus them thing continues to grow. And as that continues to grow, as one of the greatest people in Braver Angels history, Monica Guzman, like she says, those who are underrepresented in our life will be overrepresented in our minds and our imaginations. If we are not having those conversations, if we are not engaging in that dialogue, they are becoming more overrepresented in our minds, in our imaginations, and it's often not in a good way. I would say most often not in a good way. What happens then, Cody, is what we do is the fear of those people grow. Our anger towards those people grow. Anger leads to hate, and then hate turns to violence. So while you may think, or while your position on it is the drug war is evil, so I'm not going to speak with people who are in support of the drug war, or taxation is evil, so I'm not going to speak with people who are in favor of taxation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If we don't engage in that dialogue, the end result will often become real violence, and violence between people who are probably not even involved in it in the first place. So this is not to discount any of those moral convictions or to legitimize that point of view of those people who have other moral convictions. What it is it's a matter of having that dialogue so at least we aren't stuck in our own silos and we can understand the other side.
Yeah, and I think, you know, generally speaking, people you disagree with, even if their views are bad, they're not necessarily bad people. And so, I think there's also value if you want to change people's minds in being able to understand what they're saying and accurately represent what they're saying instead of just sort of, you know, trotting out a parody of their viewpoint. So there's a lot of value there too. Do you feel like there are limits though to what this kind of dialogue can accomplish? Could you do a Braver Angel session where someone is actually like a neo-Nazi? And Daryl Davis is a good example of somebody who's done this. This a black man who befriended Klansmen and pulled a lot of people out of the Klan. Do you think though that there can be some limits to those kind of things, or do you think we can sort of talk to and listen to anybody?
So I happen to be very good friends with Daryl Davis and with Jeff Scoop. Jeff Scoop is the former head of the neo-Nazi party in the United States, the former head of the NSM. His journey towards redemption and becoming a de-radicalization expert was in large part to meeting Daryl Davis. I'm friends with both of them. They've both been on my podcast multiple times. That story is one of the most inspirational stories that anybody could ever hear. It's a fantastic example of the importance of dialogue with those who are diametrically opposed to who we are. Do I think that there are limits as to? I mean, I think it is very difficult to look at anybody in a particular light and say there is no way that we could actually have a conversation with this person because they are some demonic being, right? I mean, I believe wholeheartedly, Cody, that there are people on this planet who are basically demonic, and they have no place in a civilized society. I do believe that that's true, but I also believe that there is a lesson that can be learned from all people and all things. So while I don't believe all people should just be walking around free, I do believe that there is a time to be able to have that conversation. Not that I'm going to find common ground with that particular person who may actually be evil incarnate, but there may be a time where we could have that conversation, try to learn from that person. And as long as we engage in that dialogue, we may be able to learn enough that we can help somebody else before they get to that point. So I don't know if that answers your question exactly, because not everybody can be caught and not everybody can be reformed the way that that Jeff Scoop was able to be reformed in part by Daryl Davis. But had that conversation never happened, what would have been the residual effects of that, the downstream effects of that? Had Jeff Scoop continued on the path that he was on? There were multiple attempts made on his life. He was recruiting people into the movement, you know, things like that. What are the downstream effects of that? And what would the cost be had that not happened? I mean, it's hard to say what the butterfly effect on anything is, but the reality is if we don't have the conversation, we know that the good that could come downstream from it won't happen.
So there may be some people who are too far gone, but Daryl Davis and, you know, the Apostle Paul, you actually don't know where that line is. Somebody may see too far gone, but might not actually be.
That is right. That is right. That's for God to decide.
Right. Well, so, you know, there's a lot of social psychology that seems to be concluding that people don't usually change their minds because they hear a good argument or get new information, which, as somebody who's very rationalistic like myself, was really distressing to find out. People generally change their minds for emotional reasons. And often those reasons are rooted in what some people call the lizard brain, that kind of primitive part of your brain that's afraid of them, the idea of them, in response to threats, real and imagined. And, you know, Braver Angels appeals to other emotions. It brings people together so that they get to the humanity in each other and stop stereotyping. And so I guess my question is that kind of emotional appeal more difficult to scale than that kind of lizard brain, primitive kind of fear of danger? In other words, you know, isn't fear more effective than love? And if so, is that an argument against using the Braver Angels approach if you want to get things done? Like if you actually are out there trying to create policy or attract people to your YouTube page or your podcast, shouldn't you be using, the old Lyndon B. Johnson ad where there's a little girl playing outside with a flower and then a nuclear bomb drops and they're like, don't vote for, what was his name there? Is it Barry Goldwater? Don't vote Goldwater, right?
Yeah, right.
Approach more effective? Shouldn't we be using that if we want to get attention and do something?
Well, I have to answer that in this way because I think it's a phenomenal question. And people have often asked me, you know, similar things in the sense that, and that's actually in part why I came up with the concept of the fog model, Cody. Many times people in our politics, people in our media, grievance grifters and outrage entrepreneurs online and social media will use fear, outrage, and grievance to invoke an emotional response from people. And that emotional response generates more clicks and things than, I'll use your word, the love model, right? Fear will keep people coming back a lot quicker for whatever reason than love. And I think that's an unfortunate thing. but it does not change the motivation. And it does not, like for me, if I was going to start using fear, outrage, and grievance to try and prove my point, I'm then compromising my principles on what I'm trying to do, and then doing something that stands in contrast to the ultimate goal I'm trying to achieve. And that is that we need to bring people back together. So I understand the question, and I appreciate the question, but the reality is this. Yes, it is more difficult. It is far more difficult for us. And that's why you see, not nearly as many people online doing what I do as the outrage entrepreneurs and the grievance grifters that are out there trying to keep us separated. I mean, that's just a fact. It's a natural fact. And then the followings between each are much, much different, right? The demographics are different. The followings are different. The amount of clicks and revenue generated is very different, right? But the reality is this, is I am not here to try and change anybody's minds on a particular topic. I mean, I certainly have my own stance on many things political and talk about those time and time again. As far as, if people ask me, I will say, or I will tell them. But with my podcast and my work with Braver Angels, I'm not out here trying to change people's minds on the issues. I'm trying to open people's minds to the idea that there's a better way to engage in these conversations in a way. Now, I would say that when it comes to the fear, outrage, and grievance model that I referred to a couple minutes ago, that works great for a particular person, for a particular person's base, and somebody who already agrees with you anyway on a particular thing. That is one thing, right? It's probably not changing anybody's mind, because those particular tactics, those ugly memes, those outrage-based posts, those things, they are probably just going to make the other, or not probably, most often just going to make the other person or the other side angry. Their ears are going to slam shut, and they're not listening anyway. So it's not really accomplishing anything in the sense that it's moving the needle on that political spectrum on a particular topic. What it's doing is it's firing up the base. It's pissing off the other side a lot more than anything else would. And what it's doing is it's increasing the amount of disgust at that very exhausted majority in the middle.
Yeah, that's a good thought.
Hey everyone, it's Doug from LCI. As you may know, the team at Podsworth Media has worked with us for a long time, producing our content for most of the Christians for Liberty network. A big part of that over the past couple of years has been using the Podsworth app to make our audio sound clean, level, and professional, even when the raw recordings were super sketchy, like this one you're listening to right now. Believe it or not, this recording was that bad before I ran it through the Podsworth app, and you can hear the full before and after demo yourself at podsworth.com. The app recently got a huge update, and it's now better than ever. So good, in fact, that it can take almost any atrocious voice recording and make it sound great. Here's how it works. It removes background noise, cuts down on plosives, fixes clipping when your gain is too high, removes clicks and pops, reduces reverb, improves tone, and levels out the dialogue so that you don't get any crazy volume jumps. Everybody hates that in a podcast. Using it is super simple. You just go to podsworth.com and click Get Started, drag and drop the audio files, open them right up from your phone's browser, customize your settings however you want. But honestly, the default works great for most settings. And here's a really cool thing. If you enter code LCI50, you'll get 50% off your first order. No account needed, just your email and payment. You'll get a download link in your inbox with cleaned up files. It's perfect for podcasts, YouTube videos, sermons, audiobooks, you name it. If your recording sounds rough, the Podsworth app can make it not only sound listenable, but professional. And remember, when you use code LCI50, you get half off your first order, and you'll also be supporting the work here at LCI.
Well, so I don't know if this is pushback, maybe just sort of give an example. I'll give a personal example before I ask this next question. So, you know, I believe in arguing in good faith, and I try to represent the other side, but I also sometimes will share, you know, sort of sarcastic political memes and pithy posts if I think the critique is a fair one. And I recently got some pushback for a social media post that I made, and one of the critiques had suggested, well, you know, social media political posts are just inherently unproductive. And I've been thinking a lot about that pushback because I obviously don't push people further away from the position I'm hoping they'll consider. And I also want to model Christian love. I want to, you know, do something that I think is glorifying to God. So, but I do think that pithy political posts can be effective, or else pundits wouldn't utilize them. Now, I think you brought up a good point, which is, well, maybe they're effective for changing other people's minds, but for just exciting the base. And I think there's definitely some truth to that. But we also, you know, it seems to me that we've also had a lot of shifts because of these kind of pithy memes and stuff like that. I mean, you know, just, you know, 20 years ago, people weren't going around saying that the earth is flat and the moon is fake and gay, quote unquote. And you know, and they certainly aren't saying it now because they read it in a Yuval Levin book. And so, you know, that suggests to me that this kind of really pithy, sort of approach, social media approach, has actually been sort of effective. And since I can't be the only politico who's kind of a smart aleck online, I think I can ask on behalf of a lot of other listeners, is it misguided to comment on political issues on social media, or is there a way to do it effectively and in good faith?
Yeah, I don't think it's ineffective necessarily. I think social media can be a great avenue for engaging in political dialogue, and even the occasional, you know, pithy or sarcastic style meme that is out there. I mean, some of them are very funny. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I don't, when I see some of these things, you know, I don't turn up my nose and say, how dare they? You know, I laugh at some of them as well. But I mean, as far as the effectiveness of them, right? I mean, is it really effective? Is it the appearance of effectiveness? And that is a question that I would ask, because, you know, right now we live in a time, Cody, where the rules have really all changed, and the things that we used to believe have now been disproven in a lot of ways, and I think that, you know, people often are kind of misled to believe about a certain amount of effectiveness of certain things, just in the sense that our bubbles are, I don't even want to say bubbles, but the amount of things that we see because of the growth of our field of view now, with the onset of the internet and social media and things, right? So it used to be a person growing up in a town of 2,000 people, you know, might know just about everybody in town for the most part, certainly everybody within their age bracket and maybe their parents' age bracket and a few people within their grandparents' age bracket and things like that. But it just was not a huge pool, right? But now being online, now there's this massive amount of people, and they're the velocity with which that information is coming at them and the velocity with which they can put out information is so much larger. So while in their original bubble, or the bubble like back when I was a kid in the late 70s and early 80s, that original bubble may, you know, if 5% of the people I knew agreed with a particular thing, or I could make 5% or 10% or 20% of the people I knew believe a particular thing, it was a pretty small number, you know, so it seemed pretty ineffective. But now in this toxic internet ecosystem that so many of us spend so much time in now, you know, that pool that used to be 2,000 now might be 500,000, and that 10% is now 50,000. So it's like, okay, well, that was pretty effective. You know, didn't, as a percentage, it probably wasn't any more effective, but it certainly seems more effective because there's so many more people in the pool. I don't know if you know, and I'm just throwing out those numbers, so there's no, you know, I'm just pulling those numbers out of the air. But I think about that kind of thing because I think about, is it really effective or is it the appearance of effectiveness? Because the size of the pool has changed and the number of people that can be reached and the velocity of information that can be put out there is so much higher. So I think it could be more of an appearance thing than an actual thing. I don't know if it's actually effective. But I will say, back to your original question, that it is much harder to do this kind of work than to use that fear, outrage, or grievance model. And but no, I'm not going to hold it against anybody for once in a while responding to or liking and following or sharing a pithy or sarcastic political meme. I think it's important that we still engage in dialogue. Just be prepared to have the dialogue. That's the important part.
No, that's good. Yeah, I mean, I think I don't know exactly what your affiliations are. As a libertarian, what I'd say is, I mean, I've noticed, and I think this is a story of a lot of other people who become libertarians. You know, we're probably not in any danger of becoming the majority view in America anytime soon. But we've kind of had different. I think everybody sort of has, I don't want to say this. It's a kind of a multi-pronged approach sometimes to changing your mind. You know, you might read a book, you might watch a video, you might read an article, and you might see a meme, right? And I think I feel like I've been bringing up Neil Postman a lot lately, who wrote the book, Amusing Ourselves to Death, about media criticism. And you know, his critique was that, in the TV age, that our whole kind of way of thinking and dialoguing and engaging with the world had been, what's the word I'm looking for? I'll say this, become stupid because we were sort of really focusing on like kind of TV sound bites as opposed to like reading, you know, like it's sort of a sustained argument that you sort of get in a book.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a lot of value to that. But I guess there also have a little bit of a concern that, well, if we abandon some of these kind of pithier approaches, what we've sort of done is we've given them over to people who are going to use them for evil, right? I don't entirely want to do that, but I do want to think a little bit more about ways to use it that's effective, but also not dehumanizing. And I think part of the trouble with being pithy is you have to, you know, it does eliminate nuance, right? And so I've seen before where someone will come on and say, well, yes, but not all, or, you know, and it's like, well, of course, yes, we'd understand that, but maybe we don't all understand that, right?
Like, no, we don't. And so, no, we don't. And I'm sorry if I interrupt here, I think a good point is made there. In that, you know, being critical of a particular stance or a particular topic or a particular thing, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Being very critical or pithy or sarcastic, you know, on the basis of a particular topic, I think is fair game. It's when we start to personalize it and attack the person instead of the subject, or attack the person instead of the policy. That's when it starts to be, you know, to become a problematic thing for me. I think there's a lot to be said for the idea of criticizing a particular topic, and I think it can be done in a way that we are not, you know, criticizing the person who holds that particular belief or holds that particular stance on an issue. I mean, I think that's fine. And I think you can actually make some ground in changing people's minds, as long as it's not coming across as, you know, holier than thou or some kind of rules for thee but not for me kind of way, right? I think it's important to understand that. I think libertarianism holds a lot of merit, you know, and I think if you know, me being a conservative guy with libertarian leaning, certainly a Christian conservative with libertarian leaning, I mean, I can certainly sympathize with that stuff in a lot of ways. You know, the idea that both parties right now seem to be moving closer to, in different ways in many ways, but closer to, big government. I don't even think the big government conservatism is a, or should be a thing, but it is, or seems to be, in many people's eyes. And you know, big government progressivism is just kind of what it is. But you know, so I think libertarianism has a lot of merit. But I also see that there's huge importance in a civil society and having a government that can protect the individual from undue force and fraud, and that requires certain things. But you know, kind of taking that back to the idea that you know, how do we change people's minds on certain things? If it requires a little sarcasm, that's fine. If you start to attack the person, their ears are going to slam shut. If you attack the policy, it might make them think.
So then, you know, when I think I picked on Candace Owens earlier, so I'll pick on her again. So when Candace Owens sort of comes out and is sort of saying, you know, giving these sort of, anti-Semitic conspiracy theories about satanic Jewish pedophiles or whatever, I can't just say to somebody, well, that's stupid. Do I have to do research and provide a sustained argument for why she's wrong?
Candace Owens is an interesting test case, right?
Does she break the Brave Rangers model?
I don't know enough about Candace Owens anymore to be able to speak effectively on many of the things that she's saying these days. Unfortunately, there are certain people that they just, for whatever reason, get it in their minds that they're going to go down a certain path and would rather kind of attack people to as a means to gain fame. I don't like to ascribe motives to people, but there are people out there that say some pretty awful things into certain buckets, certain boxes, put labels on them and then ascribe motives to them. I don't particularly care for that. Not that I wouldn't have a conversation with that person or try to figure out where they've come from on a particular thing. I think a lot of that stuff is fairly easily disprovable, and I think there's probably a way to do it. Sometimes those people, I will tell you, and this is a good point that you bring up, Cody, because there are going to be times. I mean, this comes a lot from conversations I've had with my good friend Daniel Darling, and many people in your audience will know who Daniel Darling is. But there does come a time when you're having a conversation with somebody and you realize, I mean, you don't have to be a martyr for your cause, and nobody at Braver Angels is asking people to be a complete martyr for their cause and say, well, I'm going to sit here and just take a beating from this person because there has to be a certain amount of good faith on either side, but nobody's going to start fact checking anybody or anything like that. So we have to understand that, you know, if at some point in a conversation, and these are structured conversations, you know, at some point in the conversation, if you realize that it's really not going anywhere constructive and it's starting to make you feel like you need a shower because it's so, you know, ugly, you know, it's better just to say, look, I can appreciate that you believe what you believe. I'm probably not going to get there, and I don't think this conversation is accomplishing anything constructive. Maybe it's better we just kind of walk away at this point. And then understanding that at that point, it's not time for for a rebuttal or anything else. We just kind of, you know, part ways. Because there are times when we have conversations with people. I mean, I know you use Candace as an example. I used to, you know, me personally, and this is just me talking, used to admire a lot of the work that she was doing and a lot of things that she was saying. The things that I've seen and heard from her lately, probably not so much. And you know, it'd be interesting to find out, you know, what got her to where she is now, you know, what those motives are. But I don't like to ascribe motives to anybody and what they're saying or what they're doing. But I do know what's effective and what's not. And I don't think that the things that she's doing right now are really increasing good faith arguments on anything or you know, and increasing or bettering the world. Bettering the world in you know, one attitude at a time is the mission statement for my podcast. I don't see a lot of those things that are being said right now as being anything that's bettering the world in which we live. So I think it's unfortunate, and you know, I'll pray for her, but it's not my style.
Right. Well, and I want to encourage, you know, our listeners who are mostly going to be libertarian, at least libertarian leaning, to check out what Braver Angels is doing. And they may be wondering, you know, part of the Braver Angels model is kind of the red and blue and the red caucus and the blue caucus and coming together. And so, you know, I'd like maybe hear a little more about what Braver Angels offers for those who aren't really red or blue, who are you know, yellow or gold as the libertarian colors are. And I'll just kind of say really quickly, for me, when I've participated in some of these dialogues, I was at one on housing, and in that situation, being a libertarian, I was like, well, I guess I'm red in this conversation. And that's kind of part of what I think libertarianism is sometimes, is sort of saying, well, on this issue, I guess I'm red, or on this issue, I guess, but also sort of being, you know, a little more red or a little more blue than the people who are there, you know, because I'm saying, well, I just think we need to get government out of housing policy altogether. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, is that kind of where libertarians fit in to Braver Angels, or are there other things that Braver Angels can offer those of us who aren't really red or blue?
Yeah. So to that, I mean, another great question. And to that, I would say this is, you know, not all issues have a red and a blue answer, right? And not all groups are a monolith. So we cannot believe or fool ourselves into believing that everything is going to be clear cut red and blue. Now, there's oftentimes, you know, especially, you know, at like our conventions and bigger events and things like that, where, you know, we'll kind of separate people up between, you know, red lanyards, blue lanyards, you know, white maybe press, yellow maybe completely unaffiliated or whatever. I can't remember. I may have screwed up the yellow and the white. But the reality on it is this, Cody, and for your listeners more than anything, the reality is all perspectives are welcome. And you know, for libertarians, I would say that there's probably going to be more in common there with the Red Caucus and more room to engage in conversations and do good work with the Red Caucus. It's important, though, that all voices are heard. You know, I think that as we do more of this bridge building work and the you know, working towards civic renewal, you know, we can't ignore, you know, people like libertarians. I think that would be a huge mistake. And I don't think anybody at Braver Angels is willing to say, well, those libertarians, they just don't fit in anywhere, so we're just not going to talk to them, you know. But the reality is this, is, you know, in our debate program, right, we typically will have a certain resolution. And that resolution is not always going to be something that can be thought through specifically in terms of red or blue. So, you know, we'll ask people in you know, are you in the affirmative on this resolution? Are you in the negative on this resolution? And do you have a couple sentences as to why you are in the affirmative or you are in the negative on this particular resolution? And there's a great way there to be part of that dialogue. the fishbowl exercises that we do, or the forums that we do, those kind of things. Yes, we ask if people are red or blue, or they lean red or they lean blue, or maybe they're purple, and maybe a libertarian says, I want, you know, just put me down as purple, because on some things I'm red and on some things I'm blue. You know, you started off by talking about being what was the considered ideologically radical and temperamentally moderate, right? Which I think is great. You know, say, okay, well, this is what I am, and maybe today that means I am some form of chartreuse. I don't know, right? Whatever. But the reality is this: it doesn't. Your voice is not dictated by some color. You know, I've often spoke on my podcast about the idea that we cannot just pretend to put people in a box, put a label on that box, and then put them away until we're ready to hear from that particular label. That is not effective, and that ideologically. So, yes, while the Braver Angels model is loosely based on, or not loosely, it's largely based on trying to keep the conversation weighted between reds and blues evenly. And I think that is important, but that doesn't mean there isn't different nuance to where those people are on at any given time. So, and that's not to say too that the reds are a particular monolith and the blues are a particular monolith and there's no gray area there, because we all know that that's not true.
Yeah, definitely. Well, especially now, it seems like things are a lot more complicated than they used to be as far as ideology.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, so where can folks find you and your podcasts and also the work of Braver Angels?
Yeah, so people can find out a lot more about me personally at deratethehate.com or wilkesworld.com. Deratethehate.com is going to be your best avenue there. So that's derate, D-E-R-A-T-E, thehate.com. And then braverangels.org is one of the most important organizations that I could ever guide anybody to if they're concerned about the partisan divides in our country, the idea of civic renewal. So that'd be braverangels.org. Braverangels.org, you're going to find out a lot about our program. You're going to find out a lot about the training, how to get involved, how to become a member. You can start to receive our newsletters as a subscriber, but I really encourage people to get involved, become a member. We are the largest grassroots organization out there working towards bridging these partisan divides and building back that civic, you know, that civic engagement, civic renewal. And it's done mostly through volunteers and become a member. It's very inexpensive to become a member. Become a volunteer, make your voice heard, and be part of this incredible movement. It's a patriotic movement. It's a love of country movement. It's a love of our fellow man movement. And get involved. Become part of it. Braverangels.org for sure.
Yep, and for our libertarians like arguing and debating, there's also like a Braver Angels debates as well, which I'd encourage them to check out. And so there's a lot of different things that Braver Angels does, in person stuff, and it's I think there's a lot of value to it, and in keeping with your own disposition toward these kind of conversations, it's not berate the hate, it's deratethehate.com.
Derate the hate, kind of the opposite of berate, but yeah, derate the hate, deratethehate.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you for being here. I really appreciate it,
Cody. It's been a great pleasure, man. What a wonderful conversation. Take care, man.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Libertarian Christian Podcast. If you liked today's episode, we encourage you to rate us on Apple Podcasts to help expand our audience. If you want to reach out to us, email us at podcast@libertarianchristians.com. You can also reach us at LCI Official on Twitter. And of course, we are on Facebook and have an active group you are welcome to join. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
The Libertarian Christian Podcast is a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute, a registered 501c3 nonprofit. If you'd like to find out more about LCI, visit us on the web at libertarianchristians.com.
The voiceovers are by Matt Bellis and Catherine Williams. As of episode 115, our audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.